Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, mother! Do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Lord, one thing, Saxon Jacks. I'm Kamau. Ricky Garcia on the board. SP Futures up 9. NASDAQ Futures up 77. We have Netflix up $44 at 6.5% on a minor beat, but they're up anyway. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Yes, you do.
Well, maybe.
What minor beef is this?
Minor beat.
Oh, minor beat.
Yes, they had earnings last night.
Okay.
Amount of subscribers didn't go up, but something else was up something. Hey, I'm listening here. Do you, once in a while, that's the beauty of you know, having some higher education, Kevin, is normally we don't hear too many terms that are, that we don't really have any idea what the hell they are. But this morning I am stumped here by your buddy Ray Dalio. He gets on TV all the time to opine. China must employ a beautiful deleveraging in addition to its latest stimulus measures in order to avoid a debt crisis. What in God's name is a beautiful deleveraging?
Well, think of the very famous Three Stooges scene where Curly's getting sworn in at the witness stand.
Yeah.
And the whole take off your hat and all that. But when they finally get it to the point where he's going to swear, be sworn in, the clerk goes, "Do you swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but truth?" And Curly can't understand him. He looks at the judge and he says, "Is he giving me the double talk?"
I think that's what
the explanation for it is. He's just giving you some double talk. That's all. You know, this is pretty standard stuff.
It sort of is, but I don't understand the whole deal. But evidently it has to do with some restructuring, which means I guess you're not going to pay all the people back. At the same time, you're putting more money in the system because that creates other problems. And you go, okay, then. I mean, we sort of know that, right? I don't know how you do all that at once. I mean, if you can't pay your debts, I mean, Ray Dalio is smart enough to realize that's somewhat of an issue. But here's what they're saying you need to do all sort of at the same time. Billionaire investor defines a beautiful deleveraging as a balanced approach to deficits that utilizes debt restructuring along with the printing of money and debt monetization. Whenever they start talking about printing of money, I don't really see that's a solution to anything, but that would be my monetarist bent on things. He said that while restructuring is deflationary, the creation of money is inflationary, thus it is the best way to reduce the debt burden.
What's he saying? Devaluing your currency is the best way to reduce your debt burden?
Well, as you must be restructuring, which much means you're not paying some people back. So those debts, but those there's no cash there. There's just debt, right? There's no cash in a loan that's not paid, correct?
Correct. So there was cash out when the loan was made.
Yeah, but now there's no. Whenever you talk about money supply and stuff, it's all in the cash. It's not in the balance sheet. It's in the cash. That's the real interesting question of China in terms of how it's approaching its debt issue. They have the capacity to do that. I believe they have the willingness to do that. It's being demonstrated by recent policies. I'm just
sure it's going to be fine.
Yeah, he obviously has money over there. Talking his book, which we see a lot of. Anyway, it's a very interesting point of view on this stuff. Without getting into politics, although you don't know how the hell you don't go
there. It could be pretty hard not to.
I know. What is the deal with this new Trump Bitcoin thing? This is a...
You gotta go a little bit, you know, a little bit...
There's a outfit...
narrow on the question.
Well, first of all, I have a couple of friends that have offed themselves to Puerto Rico to not pay taxes, right? And now it appears that all these companies are being started in Puerto Rico, so they don't have to pay taxes. Kevin, when are we going to end this? What are we doing here? What are we doing here? Are we this stupid? We must be.
There is something in one of the economic pronouncements from Trump about having way lower taxes if you operate onshore than offshore. I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it, to tell you the truth, because the details would matter in the first place, and I don't know how doable it is, how any of these things would find their way through Congress. So I really didn't pay any attention to it.
Where is it written that if you...
But you either, you know, that. So, you know, what are your options for dealing with it? Because you can't tell people they can't go offshore, but you can be very, very aggressive about how you go, how you go about taxing offshore income.
Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory, and people.
Well, I understand that too.
I mean, I have no idea why you don't pay income tax. You live in Puerto Rico.
You know what? Can't tell you. I know how it works.
You don't pay it. That's why people are moving there. They got a huge.
Oh well, yeah, I understand that part of it, but what I'm saying is I don't know what the tax code is as it relates to Puerto Rico. I'm far from an expert on anything related to tax.
In a 13-page paper, Donald Trump's crypto project, World Liberty Financial, provided a high-level overview of how coins can get allocated. The document indicated that an entity called DT Marks DEFI LLC, which is connected to the former president, is set to receive 75% of the net protocol. He's going to get 75% of the revenue of this place. The remaining 25% of net protocol revenue, whatever that means, is set to go to Axiom Management Group, or AMG, a Puerto Rico LLC wholly owned by project co-founders Chase Harrow and Zachary Folkman. So Trump and his family are going to get 75% of the net revenue of this place. What it calls the World Liberty Gold Paper, World Liberty Financial, or WLF, said that Trump family received $22.5 billion of these tokens, currently valued at about $337 million, based on the price of one... Why would anybody give the Trump family $337 million?
Well, it's a good question. Who's writing the article? I hate to have to ask, but you always have to ask.
Mackenzie, this is something this group, he's been telling people he's been working on this.
Mackenzie Sigels. I'm sure he has. I'm just always suspicious of these things that pop up in the last month before an election in terms of accuracy, so I'd like to know more about
Mackenzie Sigels.
About the source, and are there multiple sources saying the same thing?
Well, I think the paper was put out by this World Liberty Financial yesterday. They put it out.
Okay.
I'm not big on the crypto stuff anyway. The paper released Thursday shows that Trump and his family assume no liability. It indicates that none of them are directors, employees, manager, or operators, and said the project and the tokens are not political and have no affiliation with any political campaign. Yet they're giving a guy $337 million.
Well, so there's the thing. Let's assume this is accurately reported, and so I don't care about anything you just said if the family tends to has a likelihood of having the pockets lined based on something that policy can influence, then they need to divest. They can't, you know, they can't be allowed to do it. Of course they won't, and others don't either. So, so that's sort of the way what we've allowed to happen with the law, as it relates to especially Washington politicians. But you know, if that's accurate reporting, it's a wrong setup. You know, I mean, they can do it now. They're totally welcome to do it now. They don't have the ability to influence policy yet, but they probably will have that ability in a very short period of time. Is the way it's looking.
Well, yeah, I'm reading poll after poll, and I can't figure out what the hell's going on. So it's a toss up. Because I don't see how the hell you poll people in this day and age. So that's my. And my when you start talking about 2,000 people countrywide, who are they? Who's a likely voter?
You know how you can really tell, because it's the internal polling is probably much more sophisticated and better. You can tell by the way the campaigns are behaving. Who are they going after? What do they think? Where do they think they need to shore up their support? So whether it's you know, whether it is Harris and company trying to go especially after black men, whether it is Trump doing a sit-down town hall with a group of women, you know, wherever it is, that's where they think their support is. Now, if the trends are correct about the, especially men, the number of black men that are supporting Trump and the number of Hispanics in general that are supporting Trump, I don't think the Democrats can possibly win with erosion in there. They're not, you know, Trump's not going to get a majority of black men. He may actually get a majority of Hispanics, but he's not going to get a majority of black men. But if he just picks up 10 percentage points there, that's a killer for the Democrats. So you know, so if you want to read trends. That you know, you just have to follow what the campaigns are up to, and assume that that's where they're, especially this close to the election, that's where their biggest concerns are.
Well, I think even they, you know, as you know, I'm inundated by stuff from this Quora stuff, and there's a couple of pretty interesting articles in there, and really doesn't. You know, they don't go state by state or anything like that, which is really where you should go, I suppose. But the one guy, it was a pretty good article, was just talking about who really supports both people and who doesn't like him and who doesn't like her. And he just was basically saying that the demographics over the last 8 years are really bad for him. And essentially of how many older people, especially older white guys, like you say, he's making inroads other places. Basically, are dead, and this entire Generation Z or whatever that it appears to be signing up to vote at a pretty rapid pace. No polls get to them. You can't. There's no way you're going to find a 22-year-old girl who's never voted before and all of a sudden has decided to vote this time. No poll is set up to do that. And he said on a demographic argument, Trump's fighting an uphill climb. Doesn't mean he can't win, but just on the demographics, he's got a problem. And you know, who knows who these people are, but it makes some sense. I mean, I've sat in places, you know, I'm trying to get myself around, and I've sat in places where there's, you know, three young girls sitting at the bar next to me. And as soon as the dude comes on, they just go, "Oh, turn him off. He's such a creep." I mean, he has zero. I won't say zero, but he had very little of the 18-year-old girls that are going to vote their first time. He doesn't connect with them at all, I don't think.
Yeah, I get it.
You know how many people
I,
are actually?
And I don't think they expect it, so that they're not going after.
You just
that.
Wonder how
you know where they're really going after it is. They're going after young men.
Yeah,
and Trump's doing that by doing a lot of the most popular podcasts. And you know what his source is on where to go?
Oh, I have no idea.
His son Barron.
Well,
Barron knows what everybody listens to, and so you had Andrew Schultz. He was on Andrew Schultz's Flagrant. For an hour and a half.
Well, there's no question.
Let me finish the thought before you cut me off. And he's on there, and so Andrew Schultz is on with Charlemagne the God, you know, a different podcast that everybody listens to. And he said, the Flagrant podcast just won Trump the election because he sat for an hour and a half and they were just sitting there shooting the breeze like regular people. And the feedback he got from all of the young people who listened to it was so positive. He said that, you know, that alone probably just won him the election. So that's one area. Now, the other area where the Democrats are getting hurt badly, because you know Trump's popularity among, you know, like suburban moms and so on. The other one, the Wall Street Journal just wrote an article about this, calling the stealth issue is the whole trans stuff. And that's why you're seeing a lot of commercials about that, because it gets into, you know, biological males competing in women's sports, which, you know, moms hate. And then, you know, some of the other stuff like, you know, puberty blockers and so on, that's an issue that is really damaging the Democrats, and they can't run away from the support that they've had in the past because they're on record on it.
Well, there's no doubt that they're trying to make it a race.
Those are the kinds of things, though, when you talk about the demographics, where, you know, they're making inroads on the demographics that no Republican would ever have.
I hate the idea that it's being turned into the Republicans are the manly men and the other people are the girly men. I mean, it's just...
Well, except that, have you seen the commercial that they produced about with the guy, all these guys going, I'm a man?
Yeah, I mean,
it's a Harris commercial. It was produced by Jimmy Kimmel, and it's just such a cringy thing that even though they're trying to counter it, they're actually reinforcing that.
Well, you're going both sides in the last 20 or 30 days. You're going to go for the lowest common denominator in every person you can find, because it's very effective, unfortunately. I mean, we're past the esoteric money supply, foreign policy, any of those kinds of topics. We're way past those. And both sides. I mean, unfortunately, elections. The thing that I was, I don't know why the other morning, we've said a lot on the show, but I didn't realize that we were paraphrasing John F. Kennedy in his debate with Tricky Dick, because if the U.S. goes under, so does freedom. And I really believe that. And, you know, I just wonder what, from a financial standpoint, I really don't like all this other crap that the guy does going to go become president. I don't want my president putting together a crypto deal from Puerto Rico 20 days before the election. It's just me, Kevin. I'm not asking you to agree.
And Tom, I'll have to read about that to really opine on it. But yeah, it sounds, from your description, it sounds completely inappropriate. I don't know how you tell somebody who could lose the election to stop having any business dealings, you know, and pass on any opportunity that comes your way. I suppose he can afford to pass on any opportunity that comes his way for a little while. But, you know, realistically, you're not going to tell anybody to stop, but then can you put on the brakes come time to, you know, when it's actually time, you know, say you win the presidency, can you put on the brakes at that point? Because that's when you probably should, and I can't imagine that they will.
I don't understand this whole mechanism, and I'm not, as you know, I'm not a major fan of Harris, but I will say this on the scummy money side, on the personal side, she seems as about as clean as we've had in years. Now, that doesn't mean she's gonna be a good president or she'll win or anything, but I'm saying I like the fact that I don't have to look at her business things and find out what did she get for that deal and what she's gonna give them. I'm really tired of that.
I haven't looked at it, you know, because the money in her family is not hers; it's her husband's.
Yeah, there might be something there.
And I have no idea what his business dealings are. He's, you know, he's a very wealthy Los Angeles attorney.
I'm sure. So, yeah, I'm sure he does.
So guilty by assumption.
Well, I mean, I just ask yourself. I mean, this is a lot of the stuff we did at the, you know. George Stigler was, I took two classes from him, and he was into this behavioral economics and governmental economics. And I learned a lot from him and from former Mayor Daley of how influence is pushed around. I mean, I'm not an expert at it or anything like that, but it is. Nobody wakes up on a Friday morning and said, you know, this Kevin O'Neill is a pretty bright guy, and I think I should put together a company.
No, nobody ever has, and nobody ever will wake up on the morning and do that, but keep going.
But I'm saying, no, I'm going to put together a company where the first thing I do is give Kevin O'Neill $337 million. Well, and I'll take 25 and he can have 75, but I'll do all the work. And by the way, I'll go down to Puerto Rico and I'll establish residency there and all the other crap you have to do. What other business or what other stuff are these guys involved in that they think they can get way more than that back from this guy once he's in office? I mean, you just don't do that to somebody. I mean, State Farm doesn't give money to all the judge campaigns like they used to, I don't know if they do anymore, without the idea that someday, somewhere, we're going to have a big case in front of one of these guys and it's going to be an advantage to us. You just don't do that. You don't give money to people in divorce court, right? unless you think you're going to get divorced, you'd be in front of the lady or guy. You got to ask yourself, what do I think I'm going to get for this? You know, and it's pretty obvious that when Commonwealth Edison contributes to every campaign in the state of Illinois, and you look at the rates we have here, it's pretty obvious what they got from it, right? And when the guy from AT&T, you know, supposedly gave Madigan's campaign all this money, his other people, well, I can tell you from Stocks and Jacks, we were paying $650 to go from the desk where Ricky is to the alley in AT&T when we were using the... And that when we first started the show 15 years ago, I think that was $50. But they wanted to get rid of the copper stuff. They kept talking to legislators, raising it higher and higher and higher. It spits out in other people's, you know, it makes stuff spit out of my bank account, basically, or Stocks and Jacks bank account. At least I know why they do it, okay, because it's worth a bunch to them. But I'm sitting there going, okay, what exactly do these guys plan on getting from Trump if he gets in? It's worth, you know, a third of $1 billion right out of the gate. I mean, do they own a defense company? I mean, what else do they do, Kevin? I mean, it's weird. Unless they think his name on the crypto is going to make their 25% worth a bunch. I mean, he wouldn't have settled for 60. It had to be 75. I mean, the questions comes up in something like this, you're like, really? Plus, why would you give somebody 75% of the revenue if they're not a director or anything else? You know, I just... You see this...
I'm looking. I'm sure you got yours on the CNBC report.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at that right now. Donald Trump's crypto project, it's connected to the former president. It doesn't really say how in here, does it?
Well, the paper was released yesterday morning. They released it. It's not like these guys dug it up.
No. But what does connected mean? I'd have to look at the paper itself, I suppose, and see. You know, is it family business? Is it Donald Trump's personal money? I don't know. I mean, obviously you don't want any connection, but... but I have to see what that really means. I want to know more, but it doesn't sound like something I would like.
Well, what I'm trying to do, Kevin, is tie a couple of shows together if I can. We see on this all this other stuff, you know, and on the all this other stuff, everything that the city seems to do or states do, there's preferred people. There's, you know, whether we're talking about people feeding the immigrants or whatever the hell we're doing, there always seems to be people with their finger in the pie sort of along the way, and you wonder if everybody in the bureaucratic chain is friggin' crooked. Has everybody got their finger in everything? Is every alderman, every single zoning, has somebody got to get paid, the law firm? And then we talked to Bill Mariotti yesterday, and I thought that was a great interview, and from what Bill was saying, it appears that, I'm sure he didn't say all, but most of your people that do your highway projects, the engineers that work for the state, they're like a bunch of guys that's what they do and they're good at and they're sort of proud of it. I mean, I don't ever want to get to the point where every single city or state employee, I, you know, I paint him with the brush of being a crook. I don't want to do that because I don't think it's true. I think there's a real lot of people that actually like what they do. And then, you know, they're the linemen for the county, and they care about the road. I mean, as Glenn Campbell would say. I mean, where does that all end, and all of a sudden it just becomes a cesspool of crap? You know, and is the cesspool of crap getting worse or better? Because it never wasn't there. I mean, I think it's sort of getting worse. Because I don't seem to recall, and I'm sure the guys from, what was the guy from Louisiana that was the big crook? The senator or whatever, was it Long or whatever his name was?
Yeah, Huey Long.
But I don't really recall, you know, the senators from Illinois being on the take. Paul Douglas didn't retire a rich man. Neither did Paul Simon. Neither did Everett Dirksen. And all of a sudden you see, you know, these people, they're there like 12 years, and all of a sudden they're millionaires. I mean, is everything on, I guess what I'm saying is it so corrupt that it's causing the decision-making progress to basically suck? I mean, should we have given the tanker contract to Boeing when they kept screwing it up? How many times they kept rebidding it until finally they won? Would we have been better off as a defense of the country to give it to Airbus? It seemed like they were way ahead of the thing. I would rather give it to a company. But you let Boeing combine with McDonnell Douglas. You let Lockheed get out of any kind of plane that size business, and all of a sudden you're left with one company that appears to be stumbling all over the damn place.
And you're left with one company that is managing to find a new way to suck every month. And then on top of it, we have a philosophy that says we want all of our strategic aircraft to be, and the aircraft industry to be U.S.-based. So, if you really want a thriving industry in the U.S., then you better have some competition there. And they allowed it to get away from them.
I don't know. I even go back to, did you believe what Bill said yesterday, that these engineering firms have 80,000 people in them now, a normal firm? How many of those could be left worldwide? 10? 5? I mean, there used to be all kinds of civil engineering firms here in Chicago. I mean, I know that's why he moved. I'm not positive, I didn't ask him, but that his place got bought and off he went. And he must have got a job down in Miami, and then now he's in Texas. But, I mean, Concert Townsend had, you know, hundreds of really good people did work in Chicago for 100 years, and all of a sudden they're gone. And I don't like where it's headed, Kevin. I really don't. I suppose the people in charge got money or something. It's a crazy world. I mean, when the Board of Trade, not the guy who ended up, because he was on John and my show on the Score all the time, basically pushing for the vote. Of course, they never even sponsored us, which is even more bizarre. The guy before him, he was hired essentially to sell the place. And I think he was going to get something like 20% of the entire sale price. Now, how do you give somebody 20% of the value of an institution that's been around for 130 years? Say, you deserve 20% of this? I mean, really? Really? I don't know. I don't know how people even. But once it goes down that road, Kevin, it becomes normal. It's like bicycles going through a stop sign now. If somebody stopped, you'd say, "What's wrong with them?" Somehow we have inundated everything, and you see some people in some pockets, like the people you're teaching, and maybe the people who put highways together, some pockets that, in my mind, people are doing things the right way. But you just see all around, I mean, I don't know. I don't see how anybody could be a president, neither one of these two, and say, "I'm going to straighten this out." They'd be shooting at you in your bathroom, for God's sake. If you all of a sudden said, "No, you've got this incredibly crooked connection with government," and what if somebody really wanted to take on these pharmaceutical industries and just said, "Hey, in my watch, nobody's paying $1,000 for something to cost you blokes $5 to make." What kind of worldwide upheaval would you create with that? How would you even pull it off? How many enemies would you make? You'd have to be the biggest schmoozer ever. I don't think Solomon could pull that off, do you?
No, I don't think so. Hey, let's jump back on the crypto thing.
Because why don't we do a break first?
Okay, let's do that, and I'll give you something from the free press that is pretty damning.
SP Futures up 13, NASDAQ Futures up 105. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 13, NASDAQ Futures up 105. We have Dow Futures up down 26. Not much going on in the Dow. We do have Netflix up $46. That's $6. We have Intuitive Surgical up 30 at 504, so a couple of good earnings there. But it seems like every earnings now, they don't give out. Nobody gives out any prior estimates, so you can everybody beats, it seems, unless you really screw up. Then it just stacks up 10-20% because that's what we're doing. I'm going to be horrified when I see the money supply numbers this month, what the Fed is popping up in there. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 54.3%, puts you down 21.3%. The CAC RAND, which has been hot lately, is up 43.6%. So pretty much a ECB rate cut. Gucci owner Kering climbs 5%, whatever the hell they are, but they had a rate cut over there. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei up 70. Boy, that's quiet for those guys. It's 0.2%. Hang Seng, however, up 725, 3.6%, 20,804. Shanghai up 92, 2.9%. Amazing what can happen when you pour money into the system. Now, are the markets higher or the value of the currency just lower? There's the million-dollar question. Yesterday, we had the Dow was up 191, S&P was down a buck, NASDAQ up 6. So it was kind of up most of the day and then slid down on the close. Bonds, this is troubling. I think anybody, if this happens another couple of weeks, careful on your stocks. 10 years up to 4.11, it's up another point. It's solidly over 4% here. The Bund, however, is unchanged at 2.20. Japan, 0.97 unchanged as well. Oil, which has been hanging around 70. It's right back there. Now 26 cents, 70.42. Brent up 33, down 33 cents, 74.12. Natural gas unchanged at 2.34. It appears ever since the Netanyahu and Biden decided not to hit the Iran oil stuff, whatever they were going to hit over there, down $2, and somebody made some money on that trade. Gold up $18, 27.25. Wow. Silver up 52 cents, 32.29. Tell you what, my clients have had the best 4 months they've ever had. We've been lunging stuff for a while, and finally, it's every day. It's just reeling in the cash here, for God's sake. Now, we were early, I'll admit that, but lately it's been really flying across. Copper up 6 cents, 4.38. So again, it looks like that we're devaluating our dollar for other stuff. FX. 108.4 on the euro. Remember, the euro was 110.5 not that long ago, so that's almost 3%. British pound, 130, it was 132 something. So the dollar's gotten stronger. Again, the Japanese yen, 150. And we got Bitcoin, which has been going up every day, up again today, up 941, 60,810. When the value of the dollar falls, all this other stuff goes up. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:39 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at about 44 degrees right now with a high of 69. Plenty of sun. A nice afternoon for outdoor activities. And it will be clear with a low of 49 degrees. Sun of Phoenix in Arizona, 70 degrees right now with a high of 75. Thunderstorm this morning. Otherwise, will be windy and not as warm. The start of the coolest stretch of weather since April. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 60 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe is 18 minutes. We're looking at 35 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 19 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 19 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is another 23 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday, the Broncos beat the Saints 33-10. We don't have any Bears game this Sunday, but you can catch the Cardinals playing the Chargers this Monday, October 21st at 8 p.m. Let's go on the NBA preseason. Yesterday, the Suns, the Phoenix Suns lose to the Lakers 122-128. And today, we got the Bulls playing the Cavaliers at 7 p.m. here in Chicago. The MLB, yesterday, Guardians beat the Yankees 7-5. And the Dodgers beat the Mets 10-2. We got back-to-back games today. Dodgers play the Mets at 4:08 p.m. And the Yankees play the Guardians at 7:08 p.m. Finally, hockey season is back. The NHL Blackhawks beat the Sharks 4-2. Back over to you, Chief.
Ricky, what are you going to do on Sunday without a Bears game?
I know, right? Like, my whole day is over. My whole day is over.
Yeah, your whole
now.
Week is shot.
Yeah.
You're in big trouble, Ricky. Hey, did you see the Guardians and Yankees game, or at least the end of it?
Bits and pieces.
Well, the Yankees were up two runs in the bottom of the ninth, and the Guardians had nobody on, two outs. Guy hits a double. Next guy hits a home run. Extra innings. Extra innings, two-run homer ends the game.
Are they doing the start?
The Guardians were dead. They were about to go down 3-0 to the Yankees, and they had nobody on and two out in the bottom of the ninth. They were dead to rights. Now they come back and win another game. It's 2-2 series.
My one of my favorite players was put in as a defensive replacement, Rizzo.
Mm-hmm.
And he booted that ball. That should have been an error.
He did boot the ball. They did charge an error on it. But the guy was taken off with a double play, so that wasn't, you know, that was in the ninth inning. That Naylor hit into a double play, so that took that error off the board anyway. So that's why they had two outs and nobody on. It was because of the double play, only to have one guy hit a double that was like right off the top of that very tall wall that they have there, and then the next guy blasted a home run.
Well, he murdered that ball, that home run.
Yes, he did.
That was a no doubt about her.
Yeah.
You think
the guy's name is Noel? They call him Big Christmas.
God, this is the first time I think I've ever. Well, maybe I just didn't look at it before. The Yankees' payroll is three times the Guardians. More than three times.
Yeah. Now, there are some dynamics at work. You've talked to Joel about that with the Tigers. Yeah, the payroll is very low because they have a lot of guys that are under team control, a very, very young team. And, you know, the Guardians have a few more guys. So, you know, but when you have a very young team, your payroll will be low because you have control over what you pay the people. And the Yankees have a lot of veterans on second and third contracts, so they're definitely going to have one higher. But it's also true that they have this luxury tax, and the Yankees and the Dodgers and a handful of other big market teams just don't care. You'd say, oh, please, please don't tax me. No, that tax hurts the ability of the smaller market teams to compete. And when you have the revenue stream of the Yankees, you just don't care. Okay, let me sign more, but, you know, let me go farther over the cap, because
where exactly
much more money?
Where exactly is the cap? Do you have any idea?
I don't know the number. I know the Cubs just skirted over it this year, so So and you don't, you know, you pay, you only pay a proportion of what you're over. So you know, so it didn't cost the Cubs a ton of money, but it is an expense. Here's from the Free Press, and I think the Free Press is it's a source I like because they don't mind who they skewer. It says Trump is hawking another product this week, and it's faker than ever, profoundly fake. It's World Liberty Financial. It's the World Liberty Financial token that you can buy and put in your wallet. The tagline is, etc. And it says this may seem implausible 18 days out from election, but no matter. It cannot be used as a currency. This token cannot be used as a currency. You can't sell it or trade it. All buying a World Liberty Financial token allows for you is to vote in World Liberty Financial matters. Even within the world of scam cryptocurrencies, this is unfathomably scammy. Because the usual crypto tokens can be bought and sold. That's kind of the whole point of them. So it has a little quote, you know, it would be non-transferable, locked indefinitely in a wallet or smart contract. You should think of your purchase of tokens like other non-refundable purchases of goods and services and accept the risk that once you've paid the purchase price, your interest in the token may decline and you have no expectation of resale of the token. That's from the release. So it's like dealing snake oil to imaginary friends. It's like debating how many magic beans your fairy dust is worth. It's fake, wrapped in crazy. And they show the... They show the...
So where's the revenue going to come from?
And so Donald J. Trump is the chief crypto advocate for the company. Eric Trump is the Web3 ambassador. Donald Trump Jr. is a Web3 ambassador. Barron Trump, Web3 ambassador. Chase Hero is a co-founder, and Zach Folkman is a co-founder. Folkman is an entrepreneur who does basically, it looks like, hookup sites. I don't know what else to say. Series Focus Mastermind, everything from Facebook ads. Okay, so that's Folkman, and the other guy he calls himself like the dirtbag of the internet. So yeah, this does not look like something that a president should get involved in doing.
Well, hey, I'm looking at the salaries here. Maybe you can make head or tail. I was surprised, Kevin, when I looked at this. I'm kind of surprised at the groupings, for lack of a better term. So maybe you can explain to me why there's these big gaps. I thought the Dodgers were higher, but evidently they're not. This is from USA Today. The Mets and Yankees are in a class by themselves, at 305 and 303 100 million, 305 million and 303 million. Then it drops almost like $60 million. And now you've got the Dodgers, Phillies, Astros, Rangers, Blue Jays, all the way down to the Giants that are between 211 and 249. Then you drop another 30-some million down to the next group, which I don't get these gaps. I mean, maybe there isn't an explanation, but you drop all the way down to the next group, and then you've got Cardinals, Red Sox, Padres, White Sox, Rockies, Diamondbacks, all the way down to, say, 179 to like 124, and then you pile down to the bottom 10, which is, you know, the under 100 guys are the Marlins, the Orioles, the Guardians, the Pirates, and the Athletics, and the Tigers are kind of right there at 103, and the Brewers are 105. So they're all on the low end. It seems like there's almost, I don't know why there'd be a $60 million gap there in the one in the top part. And it seems like they're just kind of grouped together. I thought the Dodgers were up with the Yankees. Another one I read had the Dodgers up with the Yankees and the Mets, but evidently they're not.
No, they're very high, but they're not there. Because if you go ahead and look at the Dodgers lineup, and you'll see they have a handful of very, very high-priced players, whereas the Yankees have more than a handful of very, very high-priced players.
Actually, you know what, Kevin? Sorry to interrupt. I think the difference, the other one I looked at had the Dodgers over $300 million. I think the difference is the Dodgers, Ohtani's not taking his salary. That's the $50 million difference.
Yeah, I don't know if they do it on a cash basis or an average of over the life of the contract.
I could have sworn the other one I looked at last week had them up at 303. That has to be the difference at $50 million bucks, right?
I would guess so. I would guess, you know, that if you're looking at cash flow, that's one thing. But if you bundle in the deferred money, that's how they do the football cap. It's average over the life of the contract, even if most of the money's up front. In this case, most of the money's deferred, but you know, same philosophy. But you know, look at the Yankees. They have Garrett Cole. They have
Judge,
Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton. You can go through them all, and Juan Soto's making good money for the Mets, but not nearly as much money as he's going to make next year from somebody.
What about that Lindor guy? He's going to be making.
Excuse me, that's Lindor. Juan Soto is on the Yankees. Excuse me.
Yeah.
And the Yankees may pay up a whole lot of money just to keep him. Is that guy as good a ball player as you've seen? Who's 26 years old?
Ooh, Lindor? Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
No. Lindor is good too, but I'm talking about Soto.
Yeah.
Soto is in my mind almost the perfect ball player because he's, you know, he can hit with power, but he's not strictly a power hitter. He's disciplined at the plate. He's really good in the field. He's just a terrific ball player.
I really like that guy in San Diego that I had never seen play much before. You know, watch San Diego.
Which guy?
The outfielder that was all, it looked to me like he was all world. Great play. He was making great plays in the outfield. He's hitting a ton. What was his name?
Is it the rookie or is it Tatis?
Tatis, yeah.
Yeah, Tatis. Yeah, you know, he was a White Sox farmhand.
Figures.
They traded him a long time ago for, what's the guy's name? Big Game James.
I have two serious questions for you before
they traded him for James. Let's see if I can find James Shields. Who was, when they thought it was a trade deadline thing, and they thought they could get themselves to a, into the playoff with him. And he was about a .500 pitcher who had been successful at different points in his career. But he was a little bit better than .500 pitcher, but his nickname was Big Game James because he had pitched, you know, really well in playoffs and World Series. So I think he came up through Tampa, who is going to be low on your salary scale, but Tampa is low on the salary scale, but always churning through really good young players. And then when they get close to free agency, they deal them and they get more prospects, and they're really good at talent evaluation, which is why they're good just about every year.
Two questions. We've talked, you and I have talked about it, and Carl and I have talked about it, and a few others. When you start talking about giving money to candidates or parties or whatever, you know, what's the pecking order? What do you get for what? Because one of my friends was caught some fire, so the price went up for Paul Vallis. There's people in my neighborhood that did stuff for Clinton and things. Early on in a campaign, if you identify somebody early, then you have a tea party, coffee party. I don't know if you want to serve booze, you can or you can't. You'll put, you know, 15 people together in your big shack in Lincoln Park, which I don't have. And all of a sudden, you know, you got the nice family room and, you know, Bill Clinton shows up and talks to you for 15, 20 minutes and everybody ponies up $1,000, you know, to meet Bill Clinton. And you give Bill Clinton the check for 15 grand and you're known as, you know, a bundler, right? And all of a sudden, now he gets a little closer, and all of a sudden it's $5,000, and now you're ponying up this dough. But I mean, on a state level, I don't know enough, Kevin. I probably could find a few people that we know. You get together and say, okay, at this level, you get to call the guy's assistant. You know, if he's a state senator or if he's governor or something, you get to call somebody in the group saying, you know, with your opinion. Or at this level, if you're $50,000 donor, you get to do something else. And oh, by the way, if it's a $200,000 donor, that's when you say, hey, why isn't PTI managing $100 million of state's money, you know, type of thing. And there's sort of a pecking order to it that I don't necessarily know that well, but I suspect there is a pecking order. What do you suppose it even is on the national level? I mean, what do you have to do to get your lobbyist into where if there's a bill for concrete work that all of a sudden they name O'Neill Concrete as the place you got to go to or something? I mean, I can't even imagine what the pecking order is on that and those kinds of, you know.
Yeah, what's going to get you a meeting at the White House? Is
it a meeting to shoot the breeze, or is it a meeting to, hey, my company makes tanks. I want the contract. I think what I don't have the ability to even know these kind of numbers, Kevin, because they're so big for me. But when people say, why does a campaign cost Trump, Harris, you name it, $9 billion or $5 billion, there's got to be 50 or 100 companies that would gladly pay that whole tab. Because the amount of money the federal government throws around, or the state government or the city government, just because you're oblivious to it doesn't mean there's not a real lot of cash. That's one small contract for some of these people. I mean, it's chump change compared to, you know, I mean, when you and I were younger and they'd say, oh, man, the president spent like $5 million on his campaign. Isn't that awful? Kevin, they wing around contracts, $5 million bucks, like pennies, for God's sake, right? I just wonder what, if you really want to get into that, what it takes to be able to, you know, over a period of time, get that insulated like these drug companies or other people where they just can't touch you. How many people, you know, where if they indicted you, you'd indict the whole Senate, for God's sake. I mean, the more we do the show and the more I learn from people on the show, the more I'm just astounded at how this all goes on and how it all seems to be choreographed, aren't you?
Well, so you have to say, okay, what's legal and what's not, and then on the what's not, you know, we've talked about this a number of times. You have had this conversation with many of the guests that come in. Until we start throwing people in jail for what's not legal, then it's not going to get better.
But
it's just the cost of doing business, and that's, you know, that's killing our country. It's killing the economy. It's killing all kinds of things.
Well, I don't know how much you followed this Madigan thing, and I'm not all over it, but I know it's taken forever to get jurors. But maybe we'll have Greg on. He knows more about this than me. Somehow or another, Kevin, now you've got a guy, and his staff have been accused of taking all these inappropriate money from Commonwealth Edison. Now, I think the Supreme Court decision might have knocked out half of the stuff, but you know, I'm not a legal scholar. But now Commonwealth Edison did this, right? They've got every contract with the city to state in this area. They power my place, and all the, you know, it seems to go up every friggin' year. So somehow or another, this was very effective for them, assuming it's illegal, right? Now we got Madigan, they're trying to put in jail to make an example out of him. Yet Commonwealth Edison appears to have some sort of a plea agreement where they paid a fine to the state, not to people like me that pay the damn bill, right? We didn't get anything back, I don't think.
Not getting their money back,
yeah. No. And I think part of the plea agreement was they had to turn evidence against Madigan and agree to testify against him. Kevin, where, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but you tell me where the bleep in this country anybody would ever have thought of something like that, and how is that not immoral, amoral, illegal, whatever, if what I'm saying is true?
Well, it isn't, because, yeah, they're getting, again, cost of doing business, right? Okay, we got busted. Let's do what we got to do. But if nobody's going to jail.
I think they actually did. I think they might have actually sent some employee at Commonwealth Edison, either, I don't know if they went to jail, I think it might have been a lady, either probation, or they prosecuted some person. Yet that person wasn't doing what the board and the chairman wanted her to do.
Well, Tom, you got to understand, she was just misguided.
She probably didn't do something, but I don't know what the something was.
She was just a rogue employee.
Yeah, she's a rogue employee. last question. Hey, according to Bill, my attorney buddy Bill, big Marquette fan, I was going to ask the other Bill yesterday. Allegedly, the coach of Marquette basketball, and they were, what, top 10 last year, top 15?
Yeah, so you're saying Shaka Smart, yeah.
He has come out and said that they are not going to participate in the NIL, according to my buddy, my attorney buddy, Bill.
Yeah. That's crap.
Well, that's what I'm going to ask you. What does that mean exactly? Now, the schools can now give, even before you get before the payment, they can give people essentially living expenses, right? So there's some payment, even if you do nothing, you can give somebody something, right? A couple grand a month or whatever it is, depending on the conference.
Say that again?
You can give somebody, even if you don't participate in NIL at all, there is a stipend you can give these athletes today, correct?
Oh yeah. You can give them a few $1,000s. It's basically whatever the living expenses are, and everybody publishes this, you know, like on their website under admissions. You can expect it to cost you $5,000 a year to be here, you know, for all kinds of incidental expenses. They're allowed to do that.
Are tattoos incidental expenses?
I don't know. I think it seems like they should be, shouldn't they? that's not unusual, though. It's not unusual for athletes to have cars and anything and things like that, because a lot of people, all these families are saving they're saving money on not having to pay for college.
Yeah, yeah.
A whole lot of them have been saving all the kids' life for college.
Well, I guess my question is what can you, I use the term, entice a kid with? If you're not doing the crazy NIL stuff, can you still get them something?
I am sure you can. I'll tell you what, though. I have something from March of... I'm just pulling this up, trying to see what Smart said, and I'm not really seeing anything here. But they did have Marquette had a March with Marquette, Be the Difference This March Madness, Make a Pledge During Marquette's Postseason Run to Support Our Student Athletes, powered by Be the Difference NIL. So this is on Marquette's official website. So I'm kind of saying, yeah, they're in it.
So they got something. I mean, he must be splitting hairs, and they're not having the local auto dealer pay people or something like that.
Well, they may not be working with a collective, but they're organizing their own, and I would imagine that the local auto dealer can certainly hire anybody he wants to pitch automobiles.
Right, but I'm just making a stab here that they're trying to avoid the UNLV fiasco, where assistant coach led somebody to a local somebody and somebody who was an insurance company or auto dealer or something. The guy said, "Yeah, I'll pay," and then he didn't. Is that same thing happened to Michigan State, the Michigan State offensive line or something?
Yeah, but you know, quick search doesn't have anything coming from Shaka Smart about that. So I don't know. Maybe he said it in a booster meeting or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you and I and Carl and Lou, we've identified what, four or five levels of this NIL, right? You could do the school stipend. You can do some stuff that the school puts together with a booster group that maybe everybody gets and say that's...
Oh, no. Those are arm's-length arrangements, Tom. There's never any involvement.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess some schools maybe want to stay away from individual people sponsoring people. I mean, how does Notre Dame... I mean, do you think this guy, the Notre Dame coach, can bench this quarterback Dick Sports is paying him that dough? Is it Dick Sports?
I don't know who pays his money.
Well, last year it was Under Armour, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you think you can even bench the guy?
Well, you know what? I don't know any coach that is going to diminish his own chances of winning no matter what. That would just be foolish. That's like a way to lose your job. So I suspect you can. But there's always influence. Same thing, you know. Can you bench the guy on the Chicago Cubs with the big contract, or do you work your way through it? At some point, you do, but what's that point is the question.
Yeah. Well, S&P futures up 12. Nasdaq futures up 101. Who are the Irish playing, or are they playing?
Georgia Tech.
Those guys aren't bad, right?
They aren't bad. The game's on at 3:30 Eastern. I will be recording it, and I will be very busy winning a chili cook-off.
Now, I read once that in a chili cook-off, you cannot put beans in there. Is that true?
Well, I'm putting beans in there. I put black beans, and I put kidney beans in there.
Is this right?
My big... The thing that always makes the big difference for me is that I make bacon chili.
Ah.
So I put 3 pounds of bacon in that crock pot, and that's the meat for my chili, and that's what people love. It has that wonderful smoky flavor. It's really good.
I use some bacon in there. You know, the reason why I asked about the beans is in some big chili cook-offs, you know, the real big ones, the reason why you can't put the beans in there is because the judges can then identify the chili. So if you wanted to be, have your chili be number one, if you're the only person that uses black beans and kidney beans, immediately the judge will know it's yours.
Well, you don't give them the name. You just, you know, you describe the chili and everything's anonymous.
Okay, well, I'm just saying it, but the beans are a telltale, because everybody's going to do it differently. I just read this once. I'm not the chili judge.
My tell's going to be the bake. So,
well, I'd like to come taste. Who are the judges?
I have no idea.
Have they been selected in a blind thing?
I assume that they have whoever they have. This is a local thing here in Southwest Michigan. So
$1 million prize?
I have not bribed the judge. Hey, I just like kicking people's ass.
Oh God. Well, good luck. SP Futures up 10, NASDAQ Futures up 91. Do we have Carl? Want to go right to him, Ricky?
Sure, yeah.
You do.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm back down at my normal AO and having mostly failed to chase fall colors.
How do you fail to chase a fall color?
Well, you don't find what you were chasing.
Ah.
And you run into crappy weather that is not conducive to photography. I mean, it was pretty to look at. So.
You know, there is a spot, you probably already know this, that I read a long, long time ago. The stupid stuff I remember. If ever you drive, I've driven down to South Bend, you know, how many times and how many different junky old cars, Carl. The area between LaPorte and South Bend... First of all, it's 26 miles on an exit. Can you imagine that on a toll road?
Yep.
Somehow or another, the soil there, soil is normally alkaline, correct?
Well, you normally want it to be lightly, yes.
Yeah, well, this particular area, and I don't know what it is, whether it's sandy or whatever it is, it's slightly acidic. So people will rave some years on the fall colors on that stretch that you can actually see from the toll road. You all of a sudden...
Oh, yeah.
And it's pretty special some years. I mean, I never actually have gotten off and driven on 20 or 2 or something to look at that. But there are obviously local roads. It can be pretty awesome. And I mean, I'm sure there's other parts. I mean, don't people go to Vermont to do that and New Hampshire and those kinds of places looking for colors?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is kind of a screwed year because... What I was planning on doing before Helene showed up, and you know now I'm rather unhappy about it, is I was going to go up the Blue Ridge Parkway, which you know you start at the north end and work your way down as the colors progress, right? And I mean, you know, you can take a couple of weeks and do that and really have a good time. Well, that don't work so good now because I mean now they've reopened the Virginia section of it. North Carolina is completely closed. But the bigger problem is that with the storm that came up there, it stripped the trees. So there goes your pretty colors.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, I mean, besides the storm damage, which of course was terrible, but leaving that aside, it's gotten wrecked. And the other thing that was interesting was that parts of where I was, apparently there had to have been some kind of nasty wind event in the last couple of weeks because there was... it wasn't tree down kind of situations, but it was stripped to the, you know, to the bears, and yet half the trees are still green. So that's kind of it was an unusual pattern where I was, and I was just like, you know, I mean, you get what you can get. And then on top of that, the lighting was really dull because, you know, the sun wasn't really out, so it was real flat. That doesn't help if you're, I mean, it's fine if you're looking at it, but it does real damage to you if you're trying to do photography.
Well, there's been a lot of remember when the guy said there's going to be a lot of weather today? Well, there's been kind of a lot of weather this year. Just, you know, for bleeps and grins, the area where southwest of Chicago, where Audrey lives in Orland, Homer Glen, that whole area had this very unusual, pretty nasty hailstorm in the spring.
Yeah.
It's caused, I tell you what, talk about a boon for the roofing guys. There's people running around there. There's running around doing inspections. They'll give you a free inspection. Of course, everybody's roof is pretty much wrecked, even if you don't realize it. This one guy, I bet he's put on 30 roofs at between 80 and 140 a roof. And you know, and they're all, they're legit. I mean, they're not, it's not like they weren't wrecked. I mean, they were. But the interesting part, for if you were an animal, which I guess we all are at some point, Audrey has this huge pear tree in her backyard, and she's got a couple of pine trees with a lot of acorns, right?
Right.
It totally stripped the blossoms from the pear tree, not one pear. And yep. Usually when that stuff all falls to the ground, squirrels, coyotes, birds, you name it, it's a buffet out there. Now, right. these squirrels are running around. There isn't an acorn to be found.
Right. Well, now they've got a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is, you know, this is one of those things that it's rather interesting. So, you know, we've done this kind of stuff, and I mean, you know, but the weather is the weather. Some years it's really good. Some years it's kind of meh. And, you know, sometimes my schedule just doesn't align. This time it kind of sort of did because I had some other things I wanted to do in the general vicinity of North. And, you know, so I did them. And then I was going to try to be in front of that with the color seeking. And the timing just didn't work in terms of it being pretty from what I could see from webcams and stuff like that in the areas I was targeting. So I was like, okay, I'll go the week after instead. You know, so I shifted it a week. And I still was, you know, just the weather didn't cooperate. But there were a number of interesting things that I, you know, you spend all these hours driving, you know, you do a lot of thinking, right? So one of the things that's interesting is I noted that all of the utility companies, all the power, specifically the power companies, in extremely rural areas, because, you know, when you're hunting fall colors, the whole point is get off the highway, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, you know, county roads and, you know, secondary stuff. Some of them not even, you know, some are dirt. They're not even paved. And you know, you're using your map and, you know, screw Google because Google wants to take you down the fastest or whatever. So, you know, you have your atlas. And on top of that, some of this was in areas that I knew pretty well. So I didn't really need maps. And all the power companies are putting fiber up on the poles. All of them, including in places you would never, never think. I mean, we're 50 miles from anything, okay? And it's obviously glass, because I know what the tags look like on the poles. And on top of that, they're leaving damage loops so that if there's a storm and their lines get taken out, they don't have to put splices in. They can, you know, they can use a damage loop to pull back to the next box. And so this is important for a couple of reasons. One of the bigger ones is that Elon and his Starlink, which has been the competitive option in rural areas where there's no cable TV.
Real quick, has the internet from Dish or DirecTV with the Dish, has that ever been any good?
So it's serviceable. It's expensive. It has a latency problem. It can't be overcome by physics. So this is Hughes. You're talking about Hughes generally. I mean,
yeah, but you can also get it through Dish now, I think, or something.
Well, but it's the same provider.
Same thing, okay.
Yeah, it's the same thing. And the reason that it's a problem is because those have to be aimed specifically at the satellite in question. The satellites are geostationary. There's only a certain number of slots. I mean, there's 360 degrees in a circle, right?
Yep.
So though, in order for them to stay stationary from the standpoint of your position on the Earth, they have to be in a geosynchronous orbit. There is only one orbital plane that where that is the case, where it doesn't move, and it's way out there. It's 22,000 miles up, roughly.
Yeah, right, it's a few seconds back and forth, right?
Well, that's the, it's about 3/4 of a second latency in each direction. Okay, and there's no way around this because, you know, speed of light is not a suggestion. So the way they solve this problem is the box on your end does a lot of caching. And so when you go look at a page, it grabs all the invariant stuff and sticks it in its memory on the box. That makes it fine for regular web browsing, mostly. It's sort of okay for streaming video like Netflix, although because there is a capacity issue, there's only so many slots, therefore only so many satellites, they will demote you severely in terms of your performance when you use too much. And most people will run into the caps over the space of a month if they're watching video. For things other than web browsing, for things like gaming, it's completely worthless because it's just too slow. The latency is too high. So it's not, and it's expensive because, again, there's only so many slots. So this is, I mean, yes, it is it's an option. It's one I would never find acceptable for the kinds of things I do. And, but, you know, out in the middle of BF nowhere,
it has been wasn't the rural electrification program part of the New Deal?
Well, yeah, originally, yeah. So, but
so now who owns that right away?
The power company.
Okay, so the fiber optic people are paying rent to the power company to put.
No, the power company's doing it.
Oh, okay. Well, sort of same.
Well, but they're yeah. but they're so the whole reason they're doing it is because in more urban areas or suburban areas, the way you get rid of meter readers is you have a mesh network of all of the meters. This is all these people screaming about smart readers, meters, and you know, oh my God, they're going to kill you. They're going to give you cancer because they emit stuff. It's garbage. It's the same RF setup that's used by a home control protocol called Zigbee. It's exactly the same thing, okay? And one of the reasons the power companies like it in suburban and in urban areas is because it is quite secure. It has built-in certificate management, and it's really, really tough to hack it. But this also means that now if your meter has a disconnect switch in it, you don't pay the bill, they don't have to send a guy out there to rip your meter out of the socket. They just send a signal down, and it turns your power off.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's better than they want to charge a fortune to put the meter back in.
Well, I'm saying either pay the bill or else becomes now a, you know, not when we get a guy to go around and take yours out, right? Now it's like, click, you're done. But the other thing that goes along with that is that it gives the consumer a great deal of information. We've got this here, I've got it on Cub, and I can look at my power consumption by the kilowatt hour usage per hour. Okay, so this is, if you are looking at, okay, where is my waste in my home? If I make a change in what I do, you know, I set back my water heater, or I put a control system on to turn it off during certain times of day, whatever, what kind of a difference does it make in my actual, because you can actually measure this stuff with enough, you know, enough capacity and enough granularity at this point that you can do quite a bit to get your bill down, which, I mean, hey, that's a good thing from my point of view, right? But out in rural areas, the houses are too far apart. Doesn't work because the range is very short, the power level is very low, and therefore the range is very short. It works in a suburban area, it works in a city, it doesn't work way out in BF nowhere, but of course glass does. They already have the infrastructure in place, and you know, getting rid of the guy that has to drive around to take the meter readings is a win for them.
Well, if you got, if you've ever done any biking or even driving through, you have Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and Iowa. It's stunning. Well, you can sure tell that when people moved into Ohio to farm the place, from every top of a little hill, you can see five or six farmhouses.
Yeah,
and the railroads. If you ever done, everybody have a good time. Do some. There's some amazing biking trails in Ohio that were rails to trails. There's a couple of canal trails, and they're all really nice to bike.
They're all over the place in rural America now.
But yeah. I'm saying in Ohio, you go through this little town every few miles, and there's a sawmill there and a general store and little a few houses and probably a saloon, a church, and then when you get to Indiana, everybody's a little further apart. Illinois, they're further apart more, and you get to Iowa, maybe you can see one farmhouse, and all the rest of it's corn. It's amazing how big the farms got as you went. That way, hey, you get a chance to listen on the this Ray Dalio thing about China, how he wants them to restructure and then pour money in the system at the same time. What's he talking about? They're going to renege on some bonds and they're going to cover it by putting more money in the system?
No, look, this is... Chief, you know what the basic problem is. It's the same problem that we always seem to run into, right? Is that all this inflation game, the crank up the credit game, as I pointed out to some folks in a bar that were kvetching that they were... I was the only one in the place, and they were kvetching that people were stiffing them on tips, right? And it's like, well, everyone's getting squeezed. And I said, look, you have to look at this. I don't know if you guys are Democrats or Republicans. It's a place I don't normally go, so I really don't care. I said, this is what they do, though. And if you take out economic output and debt, and you graph them, open up Excel and graph them, and you accelerate debt a little bit faster than GDP, what you'll always find is that it creates a belly in the curve when it starts, and it feels really good. And everyone feels rich. They're not, but they feel like they are. The problem is, of course, those lines are going to cross. Okay. Yeah. And when they do, you're screwed. And so that belly in the curve feels great, but it is a false god. And China has done it. We have done it. And now the crossing part is coming. And all the people who have all of this levered stuff out there, and Dalio is, of course, one of them, is going, oh, crap. How do I avoid the crash that takes back all of these supposed gains that I have on paper, but I didn't turn them into cash? And by the way, what is this? I heard you talking about this in the first hour. What is this crap about every politician is in it for the grift? And some of them have figured out how to do it even if they lose, i.e. cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? So, how is it that a woman whose best and highest achievement throughout her life up until the point that she gets into Congress is that she pulls coffee at Starbucks? Okay, for real. All right, we're not kidding here, all right? Yeah, okay, you got a college degree, but... you couldn't find a job in field, which is why you're pulling coffee at Starbucks, right?
Let me tell you what, she's not alone.
Well, I understand that, but I'm saying you spent the money, and oh crap, now the best I can do is pulling coffees in a fast service restaurant, right?
Well, okay. name me anybody from we have a bunch of people that are currently and have been producers of the show that all went to like Columbia or someplace. For animation and all those kinds of things. Good luck with that.
Well, my daughter didn't get any of the tech gene from me. She's extremely creative. She's really good with a camera, and has an extraordinary level of creativity. But she's not a coder, right? I am. I'm a systems engineer and a coder. She's not. Has zero interest in learning it and zero aptitude for it. Okay, fine. However, she was like, she wants to do one of the fine arts colleges. And I said, over my dead body. I mean, if you choose to do it, that's fine. But I'm not signing any of the paperwork and I'm not enabling it. If you want to do that, you're an adult. Once you're 18, you make your own decisions. But the reason I won't do it is you're never going to make enough money in field to cover the cost, ever. And you're literally better off working retail than doing that from a financial point of view. And I mean, I hate that that's the way it is, But it is how it is. I mean, if the cost was, you know, okay, $20,000 to have a 4-year degree and say you have a liberal arts degree or a fine arts degree, oh, fine. But it's not. It's $150,000, and you're never going to pay for that. So, you know, if you choose to do it, okay, but I'm not going to enable you ending up destitute and bankrupt when you're 25. All right. And on top of that, everybody and their brother's chasing you.
Well, you can't be bankrupt because you can't declare bankruptcy with a student debt.
Well, yeah, that's the other problem is they'll chase you all the way until you get Social Security, and then they'll garnish it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, basically, not only are you bust, but you're screwed for life, which is, you know, short of winning the Powerball or something, you're hosed. And I'm like, no. But you have, you know, you have AOC who, you know, goes down the road, gets the degree, can't get a job in field, is literally pulling coffee, goes into Congress. Now, all of a sudden, she's got several million dollars.
By the way,
that's not from her campaign money, because you can't convert any of that to personal use. That's a felony. So, no. So, how'd that happen?
I'm going to ask an Illinois question. I believe I know the answer to this, but I'm asking anyway. I think a Senate seat or a representative seat is defined as a full-time job, is it not?
It is, yeah.
Well, see, in Illinois, nothing is. That's the reason why I asked.
Oh, no. A Senate, it is because now most states, like in Tennessee and in Florida too, the legislature is not full-time. It's a part-time job.
Well, that's the way it is. I'm saying in Illinois, I'm going to...
Well, most states, it's not a full-time job.
Well, okay, but I'm saying in Illinois, I'm going to say, where's my buddy from the south side? The governor, lieutenant governor, mayor, maybe the secretary of state, those kinds of people are full-time job. But none of the legislators, none of the aldermen, even your...
Right, they're not.
Your head of... Your head of tax appeals, all those kinds of people, those are all part-time jobs, which means you can have an active law practice representing people against the city.
Yeah, isn't that a lovely grift, right?
Yeah, well, that's what Eddie Verdoliak did forever. He represented people.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm saying it's a but from one of what my friends explained to me years ago, and this is now, Carl, I'm going to count on you to tell me when and how the change came. There was a guy named, I hope he's still alive, nice guy, in Illinois. I've told this story before, I'll be brief. When I was in high school, I believe, for some reason, and I have none of the history how they pulled this off, Carl, but they said, we're going to have a constitutional convention for the state. You're kind of too young to remember this, but I was in high school, like I said, even more bizarre, nobody who ran for the Constitutional Convention could have either held office or was currently holding office. It had to be totally new people. How the hell did a bunch of people in the assembly pass that one? So all these names, people who are 25 to 35 years old, ran for ConCon. Daley, Madigan, I think Madigan. Virtually the entire generation of Illinois politics. You got your name on for somebody's front lawn, and basically a neighborhood elected somebody. There are probably 100 of these people or 70. So, you know, in our parish essentially elected a guy, you know, and there's three or four names on everybody's lawn. And these guys, well, one of the guys' name was Marty Russo, nice guy, Italian dude. And there was another guy, I forget his name, that was his buddy. They ran and they together. Well, they ended up being representatives in two separate districts when Illinois had more people. And Marty Russo was our guy for a long time. And my buddy of mine, Doc, not Dr. J, knows all these guys. And he says, you know, I first started on the trading floor. This had to be in the early 80s. And he goes, you know, it's really a horse bleep job. I go, what do you mean? He goes, at the time they're making, I'm going to say, Carl, $35,000, something like that. He goes, this is a full-time job. Now, this is what Cheney and Trump and I'm sure a bunch of Democrats along the way have, in my opinion, have screwed up government. I don't think it was, I don't know if it was a law or was a convention or just a gentleman's agreement. He goes, Marty can't have, first of all, he needs two houses. He's got a family, or he's got to at least have an apartment out there, unless he's one of the goofballs that sleeps in his office like the guy from Wisconsin. He said, every time he goes to Beverly to play golf, one of the guys he went to law school with, who actually works for a firm and makes some money, has to take him as a guest. He goes, he's way behind anybody in his law class in terms of how well their firm is doing or how high they are in a firm or something, because he's got this rep job, basically. And because if he has any investments, they've got to be in escrow. They can't be, he can't be trading when he's in there. He gave me this long list of stuff that these guys either couldn't or didn't do. And this is, 50 years ago, whatever, 45 years ago. Not 50, 40. And he now all of a sudden, it's all changed. I don't know how it all, when and how and who did it first and how did it all change, Carl?
I don't know who did it first, but I'll tell you, one of the stunning examples from my time in Northwest Florida was that I showed up at a county commission meeting that they deliberately stuck. So in Okaloosa County, an awful lot of the people work for the government, either directly or indirectly. A lot of them are active duty military. Okay, so they work on the bases. And there's two of them that are particularly relevant, Hurlburt and Eglin. And both of them are on the south end of the county, right down fairly near the water. Well, they put a county commission meeting that was debating a tax increase at the north end of the county in Crestview at 5 o'clock, which basically disenfranchises all the working people who otherwise would like to speak and make a stink about it, because they can't get there. Okay, it's not. You get off at 5. You can't. There is no teleportation device, right? We don't have. Scotty cannot beam you up to show up at the meeting to complain. So I decided that I was going to show up at this meeting, and I was going to make a stink. And the reason I was going to do it was primarily because a lot of these people are my friends, and I knew there's no way they could make this. So I show up. And before I go, I do a little Oppo research and discover that one of the commissioners runs a title company in the county. So he has a vested interest in transactions at ever higher prices in the real estate market, because every transaction he gets a VIG if he gets the title job. Right? Now, he doesn't care what the price is, but what he wants to see is the turnover. Because you have to have a title insurance policy, right, if there's a loan. So every single refinance, every single rollover, every single, you sell this house, buy this house, there's only, there's more than one title company, obviously, but he has a vested interest in having these transactions.
There's really only like one that actually have all the stuff.
Well, but I'm saying, it's not a monopoly, but it's close enough, right? He owns one of these, and he's a county commissioner. So I show
up. That's the beauty of it, Carl.
Oh, yeah. So I show up at the county commission meeting, and I rip him a new one. And he has the audacity, the commission in general, he has the audacity from behind the desk to pull up my property tax records and say, well, you're obviously a fat cat. You can afford this increase. He actually said that on the record, Chief.
Well, he was right.
Well, of course he was right. I said, yeah, and the reason that I'm here is because you deliberately screwed all the people who can't.
Okay? Yeah,
well, that was my answer. He didn't like that. That guy, oh boy, did he get mad about that particular little comment. But I was like, all right, if you're going to try to shiv me, I'm going to shiv you back. We're now off of the merits of this. They all knew who I was because a few years earlier I had managed to get the voters to turn down a tax increase for the schools, and the reason was that they had taken the money that should have been for sinking funds for roofs and chillers and had blown it on Wii game systems for the gyms. And then of course they cried poor mouth, which is what they always do. And I dug this up out of their financials, showed up at the school board meeting, ripped them on that. That ended up in the paper. And the question on the ballot went down. So they were not, they already knew who this guy was when he showed up at the commission meeting. Yeah, I didn't do it very often, but when I did, it was because
I'm surprised they didn't like flatten your tires. They knew you were going that way. SP Futures up 13, NASDAQ Futures up 110. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Loading off by Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamal, Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 14. NASDAQ futures up 1/3. S&P futures up 14. NASDAQ futures up 113, not 114. Don't get crazy if we're short. If you're short, because who's short? Why would you want to be short? We go up every day. Dow futures down 62. Big movers are Netflix up 43, and Intuitive Surgical is up 30. So those are some of the Procter & Gamble kind of missed a little bit, but it's only down 70 cents. So that's not much of what's going on there. American Express must have done something wrong. They're down $8. That's almost 3%. They had earnings last night as well. We get some earnings kind of every day going along. Every now, won't be any tonight, obviously, or Monday morning, but we'll start again next week with pretty much all the rest of the stuff. Over in Europe, a little bit of a mixed bag, but mostly up. DAX up 76.4%. FTSE's actually down 12.2%. That's because the ECB, they cut rates, but evidently, and maybe people thought they were going to cut them more or whatever, but CAC Iran's up 59.8%, so everybody's kind of up except the FTSE. Over in Asia, these numbers are just bizarre. Nikkei up 70.2%. We get a list. Hang Seng up 725. These guys were like 17,000. I'm going to say 2 months ago, another 20,800. That's 3.6%. Shanghai up 92. That's almost 3%. So the money's pouring in over there, and people are talking about how great it is that they're going to do. I know, crazy stuff. Yesterday, the Dow was up 161. S&P down $1. NASDAQ up 6. It all kind of happened on the close. We were up most of the day and then sort of slid. Bonds, actually, they're down a basis point now, 409. Watch that. It was up almost a tenth of a point yesterday, the 10-year and the 30-year. That keeps sliding. I mean, I'll talk about that with Carl when we get back. But that keeps sliding up, it has to affect the market at some point. Now, when? Who knows? But the bond down 1 basis point, 2.19. Oil up 9 cents, 70.76. These guys had the big spike earlier in the week, and all of a sudden the announcement was made that Israel wasn't going to wreck Iran's oil stuff, and right back down to 70 in this real close 70 to 71 range. Brent down 2 cents, 74.43. Natural gas unchanged, 234. Arbob unchanged at 204. Gold continues the march here, up $20, 27.28. Silver up 65 cents. It's a 2% move, 32.43. Copper up 8 cents, 440. Foreign exchange. The dollar rides Trump trade toward third weekly rise. I'm not sure what all that means, but anyway, the euro is 108.5, so that's down some. The dollar has been stronger. British pound, 130.5. And Bitcoin, up another 789, 67,657. So even though the dollar is up against other currencies, it's not up against other stuff. That's why those other prices are going up. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:37 here in Chicago. 43 degrees right now with a high of 69. Plenty of sun and a nice afternoon for outdoor activities. Tonight will be clear with a low of 49 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 67 degrees right now with a high of 75. Thunderstorm this morning, otherwise windy and not as warm. This is the start of the coolest stretch of weather since April over there in Phoenix. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 60 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, we're looking at 29 minutes. 44 minutes, inbound Kennedy's from inbound Edens from Lynn Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 14 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, we got 29 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 35 minutes. Sports, yesterday the Broncos beat the Saints 33-10. There's no Bears game this Sunday, but you can catch the Cardinals and the Rangers and the Chargers facing off Monday, October 21st at 8 p.m. NBA preseason is in session right now. The Phoenix Suns lose to the Lakers 122-128. And today we got the Bulls playing the Cavaliers at 7 p.m. MLB yesterday, the Guardians beat the Yankees 7-5 and the Dodgers beat the Mets 10-2. Today we got back-to-back games. Dodgers playing the Mets at 4:08 p.m. and the Yankees playing the Guardians at 7:08 p.m. Lastly, the NHL Blackhawks beat the Sharks 4-2 yesterday. Back over to you, Chief.
Carl, just when you mentioned earlier, and we have mentioned before, the interest rates in the long term now are creeping up a little bit. Now, they're not up to 5 like they were last year or the year before, but they're creeping. The money being put back in the system now all of a sudden, and I'm dying to find out the money supply numbers this month, which everybody else already seems to have except people like us.
Oh, no, you can't have that, but everyone else can.
Yeah, everybody else can have it. But the and you see, there used to be a joke on the trading floor way back. If we all just put money in the market every day and buy stuff and keep our hands in the boat and nobody ever sells, would we all be rich someday? And guys would like start throwing stuff at you. That'll like never happen. Some combination that sort of started to happen when the ETFs first came out. And you saw, especially when the Qs, I think, came out, because they were the first ones that had maybe 5 or 6 stocks that were almost 50% of the index. So in 97, 98, 99, if you put money in, you probably didn't even really know you were buying. Those are the stocks you were buying. Same phenomenon is sort of here today.
Right.
But the Fed, you know, put some money in for Y2K and did all that kind of stuff. But they really didn't. I don't know if they were necessarily focused on web building, wealth building, the way they sort of are now. You know, I you're never going to get any disagreement out of me regarding, at some point, you know, Microsoft 12.4 times revenue. Okay, what about 15? What about 18? What about 30?
Well, at some point, you say that's stupid.
Yeah.
Right.
Now the question is, but every week, I mean, you wonder. That's why you see a boring day in the market. The afternoon, we usually creep up.
Right.
Because
it's the ETF flows.
Well, it's ETF or it's a mutual. Yeah. A lot of people are still in mutual funds.
Well,
mutual fund buy and
the
close. So,
well, that's just, yeah, mutual funds are, you get the close price. Yeah.
But that's when they actually buy. That's why you get the close
right.
price.
Well, exactly. Right. When it actually goes in. Yeah.
So, yeah, but I mean, I guess since it appears to me that the Fed, and not just the Fed, I mean, you know, Trump can say all he wants about it, he wants to be in charge of the Fed. The Fed saved his ass. If he would have sent out all those checks during COVID and they didn't pour money in the system, where does he think he would have got it from?
Well,
So, the point is that what carnage has to happen? For all of a sudden on a Tuesday, something happens. Is it going to be? I think, to be honest, Kyle, I think the biggest risk we have might be China. And I think the amount of wealth in this crypto is dangerous. If somebody all of a sudden finds that somebody's stealing, if somebody doesn't, use their crypto account for 5 years, somebody found a way to hack it and steal it. If any slight rumor came out about that stuff, where would that go?
Well, it would go to zero in an afternoon, because the problem with, so far it hasn't happened. And,
no.
And honestly, I don't consider this a high risk, because cryptography is fairly well understood at this point in time. We're not in the early days of this by any stretch of the imagination, okay? But by the way, there was a rumbling on this sort of thing that came out of China about them allegedly having a working quantum computer. Now, I am a serious skeptic about this, all right? And I threw a lot of shade on it. I haven't written an article on this, but my instant reaction to it is it's BS. It's more garbage coming out of the PLA, and, it's propaganda, basically. But the claim was that they had been able to break commercial and by the way, DoD and military grade encryption, which implies they broke AES,
using this. AES is the algorithm that is used to secure everything from your internet transactions to, you know, to everything else, right? The problem with quantum computing in general is that as you increase the density of it to the point that it becomes useful, the error rate goes up to the, and it's uncorrectable. So unlike, like, if you have a CD, there's an error correction code in the CD. That's why it doesn't skip very often unless it has a lot of smudges on it. If it's got a small one, the software can correct the error and nobody's the wiser. And the same thing's true with larger scale computers. The machine that I have here, my big server, because I do processing on it, I cannot afford to have it damage the data that's on the disks. It has error correcting memory in it. So if there is a cosmic ray hits the memory chip and disturbs it, the system can detect that, fix it, and life goes on without any problems, without anything crashing. Your laptop and your desktop machine probably don't have this, neither does your phone, because it costs more money and it slows it down. So people don't pay for it unless there's a need. But the problem with this is that in quantum computing, as you increase the density of the quantum computer to usable amounts where it can actually do useful things, that error rate goes up exponentially, and so far nobody's figured out how to stop that. That is what prevents them from being real in the commercial context. And the allegation is that China has solved this. Now, if they have, if this is true, then blockchain is instantly worthless. All of it. Because I can now tamper with it and replace it, and there's nothing you can do to stop me. So if this is true, this is an earthquake, not just for military secrets and banking security and all sorts of other things, but it also makes all crypto instantly a zero. All of it.
That would not be good.
Well, you know... You hope it ain't true, right?
Well, but I mean, I guess when you look at how these things happen, and you know, it's not just going to be a whole lot of people, you know, wake up on a Thursday and say, "God, you know, Microsoft's too high." Because the simple fact is, there's got to be 2 million people in this country that this week on a Friday.
They buy.
They have a paycheck and they're dribbling
right.
into.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're going to buy because their 401k money is going to go in.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you're in an index, and I basically rag about what we're doing, and yet I had people give me money in the last. Plus, we've made a lot of money for people in the last few months. You know, what do you want to do? Well, let's buy a few more Qs. Okay. You know, I have it protected.
But it is what it is.
It is right. What it is.
Right, and yet at the same time, everybody in the below the median line is getting it in every hole they have.
Yeah.
Okay, and the imbalance ultimately is what kills these things. It's you know, it's interesting because in the real estate area, of course, you know, an awful lot of people's money is, you know, they think. It's like any other paper. You know, I've got a brokerage account. It's got a statement. It says that I have, you know, I have this balance as of right now, right? Net liquidation and day trade, you know, value. Okay, so if I liquidated it, that would be, you know, that'd be how much money I'd have. But the truth is, until I liquidate it, that's a number on a screen. If I liquidate it tomorrow or today, I push the, you know, flatten everything button. Okay, now it's cash. But until then, it's not. And the same thing with my house. I mean, supposedly, my house has roughly doubled in alleged value over the last 4 years. Yeah, okay. Maybe it has, maybe it hasn't. But until I sell it to somebody, that's just a number on a screen. And what's happened in a lot of markets, including this one, is that while there are a few transactions, for all intents and purposes, the market is locked. So... the issue is simply that if I look at what it costs to actually buy one of these, buy the median house, not a short-term rental house, but a house you actually want to live in, you know, because it actually has closets, because a short-term rental one's don't.
Yep.
So an actual house that you could live in. If I look at that, you are in the top 2% of earned wages on an affordability basis in this.
I did this within
a 45-minute drive. So, yeah, that's not reality, guys.
I did this calculation in 2008. Of course, I had the disagreement with my real estate girlfriend. And at that time, I didn't do it. Actually, it was an article. It's here somewhere, Carl. If I get it, I'll scan it and send it to you. Because it's so far in the past, you can't even really argue with it. But it was...
Right.
At that time, the average house was 235. Average median was 235. And if somebody gave you the 40-some thousand for the down payment back when 20% was the number, you needed $85,000 to qualify for the remaining mortgage.
Right.
And so, and I think the article had only 15% of the population made $85,000.
Right. So you had the same distortion, but now it's worse.
It's way worse because now you got to be, now your taxes and insurance are double what they were back then, if not more.
Well, that's the yeah.
So you got that little thing working for you as well.
Right.
But I guess I jokingly said that my brother, you know, we manage all this money for people. He says, "What do you think about the puts?" And I said, "Well, we've been suspecting the market's going to keep going, even though you know you and I talk about trap doors here. We have not. I mean, if we've got say the Qs, normally I would like to keep the puts pretty darn close. You know, the Qs
right.
are 494. You know, I wouldn't mind having the 490s, but since it's going up so fast, you know, we might have the 480s, and we're letting them go a day or two." You know, and we've done very well. I mean, we're not doing as well as if we didn't have the puts, but we're not spending a lot for the protection.
Right. Well, the protection's been cheap because the VIX is
yeah,
cheap.
and we haven't rolled them like I'll say I might normally. My brother goes, "What do you think we should do?" And I said, "Well, we leave the puts dragging until the day before something's going to happen, and then we bring them up." Okay. He's like, "Okay, then you're going to tell me the day," and I go, "I'll talk to Carl."
Well, this is so. Here's so you know you're talking about the rate thing, and you know, and you brought up when Kevin was on too. And as you know, I've been yelling about this for quite a while because this inversion now is almost 2 years old. Okay, which is I mean that has never happened outside of the actually at this point I think it. I'm looking at the weekly right now. It is well in another in another couple of weeks when we cross into November. Oh, right about election day. Oh, isn't that convenient, right? It will be 2 years old, and I'm not. I used to be a fairly diligent chartist with a lot of things. I'm not so much anymore because they stopped working after 2008. The computers are simply faster than you, and there's so many of them that you know you're just going to get front run and lose money if you try to do that sort of thing. But when I look at this at this pattern, and again, this is the you know the TNX minus the IRX, so you know tens minus the 13-week bill. We've been talking about it being you know well below neg 10 for quite a while. Well, it's at neg 4.34 right now. You know, with the bonds trading at this point. And this is headed back. I mean, if you look at where this is, it broke over the neg 5 level, which was a key level, and it held there. It has not backed off. On the weekly chart, it has been a constant set of green candles. Assuming it goes out today where it has been all week, it will be a tiny little red guy. But not by a lot, no real retreat. And if this thing goes back positive, historically speaking, that's when the recession starts. Okay. Now, we're never
going to have a recession because
yeah. Okay, Chief. But you know what? Price discovery on real estate is going to eventually happen, and when it does, it is going to be brutal.
When I say that, you know, I'm tongue in cheek because
oh, I know you are, but our
people are going to put enough money into the system to where the overall numbers never show a recession, but 90% of the population is going to be in one.
Well, except that at the point that you can't, you know, there's I want to buy something, and then there's I have to buy it, The I have to buys go first, right? Because you really don't have a lot of choice. And then when you can't hit those numbers, that's when the really serious dislocation kind of effects come in. And that's the kind of thing that happened back in 08. It's the kind of thing that happened in 2000.
I'm just going to tell a story about a study I did maybe 3 months ago. And I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not pushing back. I'm not everything. But somehow or another, you and Russell and everybody are real numbers guys, and I think I'm somewhat of a numbers guy. But somehow my mentality has been, shall we say, changed or something by the behavioral economics part that I took at Chicago.
Yeah.
And one of the, this is probably, I'll bet if you think about it for a second, you'll know I'm right on this. I went back, why I did this, I think it was pouring rain on Saturday, I had nowhere to go. I dug out a piece of paper. You know, you would have an Excel thing, I got a piece of paper. And I went back to the when I first started the business in, you know, in 1980, 81. And the market was, I'm going to say the Dow was 800, give or take. I don't even know, I can remember what the S&P was. But basically, it's flat on its ass, right? And it had not gone up since, I think we went through 1,000 the first time in 60. So basically, the market was down over a 14-year plan, period. It was either unchanged or down. Now, people today would say, how could that ever possibly happen? Well, it has. There's been two decades since I've been in the business where we were down in the decade, and that was like one of them. But so the weird part is your interest rates were 12, 13%. They got as high as 15% at the savings and loan of the bank.
Yep.
So everybody, no matter who you were, you'd say, now the market hadn't moved in 14 years, and I'm making 14% in the bank. Gee, what am I going to do with my money?
Yeah. Well, look, I remember passbook savings accounts where you actually got a return.
Yeah. Right? But I'm saying the CDs got to, when this really blew up in the late 70s, early 80s, you were up to, I mean, Robin got, I think the tip top she got was 15.5 in a 2-year CD at Continental Bank.
Oh, yeah.
And my mom was getting 13.5 at the local savings and loans. Anyway, so, but the weird part was Volcker gets in there. The CD rates actually went, they tip-topped out, and this is my piece of paper at home. The rally started in August of 82, okay? The rates probably tip-topped out in maybe November of 80. So we're talking 22 months before.
Yeah, it took a little while, yeah.
But they were like at 15, and they had made their way down to like 12.5. So it was kind of very obvious, not obvious, it was right there, where interest rates were going, okay? Yet the market, during that 20-month period, actually was down 20% or 19%, even though the handwriting was right there on the wall. But behaviorally, if I'd have gone to a party and run into this young Carl Denninger or Carl's dad or grandpa, and you guys are all sitting there with your wines with your pinky in the air, I'm sure, and I said, these rates are coming down. It looks to me like there's no way this market is not going to start going up here. I would have been first cut off at the bar.
Way early.
Yeah. It already wasn't early in the sense it was already happening. I mean, the rates were already moving.
Right, but the market didn't move.
Because I mean, if they were looked at me and said, "What are you talking about? The market never goes anywhere." What did my uncle used to say? I bought Charmin tissue in the 20s and I got wiped out. Something like that. I mean, the thought, I don't even know, do you think your mutual fund guy was out painting houses somewhere? Could you even have found the guy? So now, this time, everybody's talking about the Fed should cut rates. The Fed went from 0% to 5.25%, and the market is up 20%. It's the exact mirror image of the early 80s. What do you mean? Why would I put my money in the bank? I put it in the market. It goes up every year. What are you, some kind of moron? All I do is look at my statement every month and figure out how much more money I got. Why would I ever not do that? Same way the other way. Why would I ever go to a bank, cash? Can you imagine cashing in your 14% CD and tracking down your mutual fund guy and putting it in the market?
You know, it's the amusing part of all of this, from my point of view, is that if you were in the market, but on the bond side, and you actually went out and bought 30s, you laughed for three decades off the coupons.
When I was a board,
because they were selling for pennies.
Yeah, I'll tell you exactly where they were. Because I used to get, when I was a Board of Trade member, we did spreads over there. I never traded over there, but a Board of Trade seat included an option seat. So once in a while, the lease would actually be cheaper there, whatever. So, but I had a Board of Trade seat, and so I would get this big manila envelope every month in the mail at home. And in there would be huge tables of the various bonds. Because when you traded, the 30-year bond was the thing to trade. It wasn't 10-year, it was a 30-year.
Right.
There was one bond that was traded. And it was
right, that was the benchmark.
That was the benchmark, and it was out 30 years, and it was an 8.5% bond.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but if you didn't have that particular bond, you could deliver 0.992 of another bond, or 1004 of another bond if you had to deliver. You know, so then that was all. But guess what? Guess where I'm winning a point here, Carl. Guess what the low tick was of this 8.5% bond? Now, this is 30 years. 30-year never got as high as CDs.
Right. No, I know. Because nobody actually believed it would stick for that long.
Right.
Right.
But where do you think the low tick was?
I don't know.
I'm going to say 67.5.
Oh, that's actually not as far down as I thought it would have been.
Well, I mean, we're talking about an 8.5 coupon.
Well, I understand. Yeah, I get that. But you know, that's the other side of this too, is that you have the 10-year. You know, this that right now is at 4.08. Okay, I mean that's you know, right as I'm looking at it, and the IRX, the 13-week bill, is trading at 4.51. So. You know, this is, I mean, it is what it is, but the thing is that long-term rate, and this, by the way, is what Cash Carey was talking about, I think it was last week. He basically said, look, if the government doesn't cut this deficit spending in, then we do not have, I mean, we can try to stomp on the long end, but we're trying to shoot pool with a rope at a certain point doing it. And that all we're going to do is stoke inflation. And what I pointed out in a long podcast that I did about a week ago is that the second inflationary spike is already in the data.
It's already there.
It's in the policy. And by the way, it's going to hit in January and February, right after the inauguration.
I'm not so sure either one of these people really are going to want this job when it's all over. But we got to dash. You know, I also think that if China has to cut back dramatically on the money they put over here, we could have a 30-year bond auction that's up like 1.5%.
Oh, absolutely.
Carl, on the other hand, make some money betting on sports this weekend. What the hell?
Well, you know, we got this minor little game that's going to go on with the Vols.
Oh, hey, we got to. I got one stupid question to ask you. Were your minor league team with the new stadium, were they ever in the hunt for Tampa Bay's home for a year or two? I guess they're going to go by the Durham Bulls, aren't they, or something?
I don't know what's going on there. I mean, I still haven't quite unraveled exactly what the whole scheme was on this.
Well, I guess they're not going to try and fix the stadium, are they?
Well, they've got a problem with that in that it's got it awful expensive to do it. And the stadium was never built to handle impact from water above, right? Because they had a roof on it. So there's a drainage issue with them attempting to use it just as it stands.
Well, yeah, if it rains now, they're in trouble.
Well, yeah, they're hosed. Yeah. And by the way, it does that all the time in Florida.
Yes, it does. All right, bud, we'll talk to you on Tuesday. SP Futures up 13, NASDAQ Futures up 116. Everybody have a good weekend. Back on Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.